and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Christina Woolston and Taylor Bickford. If voters choose to legalize marijuana, Alaska will follow in the footsteps of Colorado and Washington. What does that mean for Alaskans? Woolston and Bickford debate ballot measure 2, which will be put to voters in November. It would allow the state to tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. This debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and was recorded July 21st at the Egan Civic and Convention Center. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow served as moderator.
Today we are going to address the issue, the ballot issue of legalizing marijuana and commercializing marijuana in Alaska. This will be on the November ballot, so there's still plenty of time to watch the campaign and get educated. Our sides today represent the pro and the con. To my right is Taylor Bickford, representing the Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol, Yes on 2 campaign. And to my left is Christina Woolston, representing Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2 campaign. The structure of the debate today will be as follows. Each candidate will get a 4-minute presentation. Then we will go into questions. And these questions were designed by our Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Legislative Committee. Now on to today's debate. Today you'll be hearing from both sides of the ballot measure. And to start with, we will start with Christina Woolston.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Christina Woolston, and I'm the volunteer spokesperson for the grassroots organization Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2. I represent a growing group of concerned Alaskans from all over our state, from all walks of life, from different political persuasions, who all think this initiative is bad for Alaska. Like so many Alaskans, I had no idea what this proposition was really about. I had no idea when this outside organization was talking about legalizing marijuana, they were actually talking about the commercialization and advertising, an extreme measure that allows for the aggressive advertising of edibles and concentrates. These are dangerous products, many of which are packaged and marketed in ways that are appealing to our kids. As you may hear, Taylor will want to talk about alcohol today. Well, this measure is not about alcohol. This is about big business striving to make a lot of money off of Alaskans. The only way they can do that is to get current users to use a lot more and recruit new users. I will make a friendly wager with you. Taylor will say alcohol at least 20 times today. You can count along with me. But every time you hear it, a ding should go off in your head, because this is a distraction and a smokescreen, and the campaign will continue to say it over and over. Because when you want to sell marijuana gummy bears at the corner store, you need a good distraction. So every time you hear alcohol, ding, it's a distraction. Now, advocates claim legalizing marijuana will bring in vast amounts of tax revenue. How much? Well, they can't or won't say. But if you run the numbers based on the Colorado experience, Alaska could be looking at $5 million. $5 million. When you estimate what the state says they will spend in implementing this, it's $7 million. And based on evidence, for every $1 raised in tax revenue marijuana tax revenue, it costs Alaska $10 in lost productivity, increased accidents, harm to family, harm to youth, and increased health costs. Now, speaking of costs, on the screen is a quote from the New England Journal of Medicine. It basically says, legal drugs are the most harmful because they're the most prevalent. Is cocaine worse than tobacco? Absolutely. But which causes us greater problems and at a greater cost? It's tobacco, because it is legal. And what does this do to our kids? My son Noah is in the audience today, and kids equate legal with safe. It gives them the false impression that using this drug is normal and, most disturbingly, safe. That leads to an expansion of drug use and abuse, especially among young people. Studies show marijuana can lead to an 8-point drop in IQ. Teens who use marijuana have higher rates of school dropout, other drug use, mental health problems, depression, and suicidal thoughts. These are our children, and these are your future employees. If you're having trouble finding qualified workers now, just wait. And how about incarceration? The myth is we are wasting millions of dollars locking up thousands of Alaska for smoking pot. It's just not true. The Alaska Attorney General's office recently asked the Department of Corrections how many people in Alaska were serving time for marijuana possession. The answer was one. Not 1%, one person. We do not have a marijuana incarceration problem. Taylor said just last week that his group is in the driver's seat. The money is pouring in from the D.C. Marijuana Policy Project, funded by a handful of wealthy Lower 48 businessmen who see Alaska as the next pawn in their national strategy. Taylor says they will do whatever it takes to win. Well, in my opinion, Alaskans should be in the driver's seat. We should be the ones who decide this issue. Are there changes that should be made in how we deal with marijuana? Probably. Should Alaskans get together to solve these challenges? Absolutely. But should an outside organization jam their agenda down Alaskans' throat? No. This is an extreme measure, a lower 48 approach that is wrong for Alaska.
Thank you, Christina. And just a note, you have paper on your tables there with pens. So if the audience has any questions during the debate, we encourage you to write them down and hold your hand up. One of our staff will come by and pick up your questions. And if you could do that during the format, that will make the Q&A a lot faster at the end. Taylor?
Thank you all for being here today, and a big thanks to Andrew and the Chamber for putting on this event. The last time I was in this room was actually for the Beer and Barley Wine Festival, and those of you who've been to that event before I think know it's a very different scene than what we have today. Ballot Measure 2 offers voters with an opportunity to enact an important public policy change that is being supported by a large and very diverse group of Alaskans. Support for any marijuana prohibition comes from former attorney generals and chief prosecutors, judges, PhDs, current and former Republican Party officials, accountants, students, Tea Partiers, rural Alaskans, a former deputy commissioner of corrections, libertarians, independents, leading Democrats, medical professionals, and more. The reasons Alaskans have for supporting this change are equally diverse. Some see it as a liberty issue, some see it as an economic issue. Some understand that our medical marijuana system is broken and that passing ballot measure 2 will allow patients suffering from serious conditions to access their medicine without fear of prosecution. Others recognize that law enforcement should be spending their time addressing serious crimes rather than prosecuting and arresting responsible adults simply for possessing marijuana. One thing that almost everyone can agree on is that prohibition has failed and that it's time for a new approach. We can spend an entire luncheon on each of these topics individually, but our time is limited. In my introduction, there are three things that I want you to consider over the course of this debate. The first point is that marijuana is objectively safer than alcohol. Christina is going to spend the next hour trying to scare you into thinking that marijuana is more dangerous than it actually is, but government studies and scientific research have conclusively found that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol to the consumer and to society. Even the most potent marijuana in concentrate, edible, or any other form is less addictive, less damaging to the body, and far less likely to trigger violent or reckless behavior. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention attributes 40,000 deaths per year to alcohol use directly, about 480,000 deaths to tobacco use, and zero deaths to marijuana use. The second point, and this is really important, especially in this setting, is that marijuana is already widely available and widely used in Alaska. We have the highest rates of use in the country at 16.29%, which equates to about 100,000 Alaskans if you use that percentage with population estimates. So we have to recognize that the industry is already here. It already exists. And the question is not should the industry exist, but how should it be handled? This multi-million dollar industry is currently being run by criminals in the underground market. And Christina's organization would like to see that continue. Whereas we would like to see it transferred to a regulated environment that would, where it would be controlled by licensed businesses that have to operate in the open, be good neighbors, hire Alaskans, card miners, and pay taxes. The final point is that regulation is working. You're going to hear a lot of anecdotal stories about what's happening in Colorado, but support amongst voters remains strong, and the state's top marijuana regulator says there are no significant areas of concern, and that opponents' fears have turned out to be much ado about nothing. The Seattle Police Department also recently said that nothing much has really changed with the passage of their initiative, and they just recently launched their market. So in closing, I urge you to remember these points during the debate. I also want to say that I was hopeful, although not particularly optimistic, that we could have a reasonable discussion today. But based on my counterpart's opening remarks, that seems unlikely. It's no secret that marijuana prohibitionists have resorted to fear-mongering for generations. For example, federal narcotics chief in 1948 said that marijuana leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. In 2014, the opposition has compared marijuana to crack cocaine and insinuated that it leads directly to violent crime. These scare tactics are not helpful to the public discourse, and I hope we can have a reasoned discussion today. Thank you.
And I would encourage the presenters to honor the bell there. Megan James, our director of events, has a tendency to protect her time. On to the questions. The Alaska Supreme Court has already ruled that under the Right to Privacy Clause in the state's constitution, possession of marijuana for personal use is already legally protected. Is this initiative strictly about commercialization? And each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond. Christina, we'll start with you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Andrew. We have 2 minutes to respond?
2 minutes.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate the notifications. This initiative is expressly about commercialization and industrialization of all marijuana products in any way that you can get it into your body. In Alaska, and the Marijuana Policy Project out of Washington, D.C., knew this. This is a strategic, we are part of their strategic plan. We are their next conquest. They identified Alaska because our Constitution states that a ballot measure cannot be changed for 2 years. Everything that is in this ballot measure, we are stuck with. In Colorado, they are already seeing many challenges. They are trying to roll back much of what was in their ballot measure. We cannot in Alaska. The other issue is, followed the categories of what you guys lined out, and this is just a little bit different, so I'm trying to organize my notes here. The commercialized effort is really about making money for businesses that profit off of Alaskans. But when you look at Colorado, 44% of their revenue is based on tourists, and these are in the urban populations. In rural communities and in mountain communities, it is 90% tourism revenue. The commercialization that they're focused on in Colorado, when you want to talk about tax revenue in Alaska, it will not happen here.
Same question, 2 minutes.
There's a lot to respond to there. The first thing that I want people to absolutely understand is that this initiative lays out a framework, and there will be a 9-month rulemaking period after the initiative passes. All of the things that Christina is talking about, whether it's marijuana lollipops, gummy bears, these things can be absolutely banned during the rulemaking process. Section 1738090 actually requires the adoption of rules necessary to prevent the sale or diversion of marijuana and marijuana products to people under the age of 21. And nobody wants to see marijuana end up in the hands of kids. Washington State recently banned marijuana lollipops and gummy bears and all of these things, and I think that makes good sense. So it's simply a misrepresentation of the initiative to suggest that these things have already been decided. They haven't been, and that's going to be up to our policymakers ultimately to decide. And I think, as the spokesperson for this effort, I absolutely support wholesale bans on anything that could possibly be attractive to children. Nobody wants to see kids using marijuana. This is not just about the commercialization of the industry. It's about ending prohibition. Prohibition has failed miserably, and it's failed for many of the same reasons that alcohol prohibition failed. We haven't stopped anyone from using it, and we have essentially pushed this multi-million-dollar industry into monopoly control from criminal organizations. And so what we have in this state is a big multi-million-dollar marijuana industry that is being run by criminals. The most notable problems associated with the industry are the deaths and the murders that have occurred as a result of underground marijuana transactions. So by taxing and regulating marijuana, we can move it into a regulated environment just like we do with alcohol and end this wasteful and ineffective government program of prohibition.
Thank you. The use and commercialization is currently forbidden by federal law. If the initiative passes, how will the state authorities reconcile this with federal law? Taylor, 2 minutes.
The Department of Justice, shortly after Washington State and Colorado pass their laws, set a policy that it would not interfere in those states, that states that pass marijuana legalization laws, that the federal government will defer to those states. I think it's also important to note that Representative Don Young has supported and actually sponsored two really important bills. He sponsored a bill that would essentially codify that policy into state law so that after the initiative passes, it would actually become federal law that the federal government cannot interfere in these states. And he has a similar bill that he co-sponsored with Dana Rohrabacher, another Republican out of California, that would do the same for medical marijuana states. That effort is being supported by Rand Paul on the Senate side. And so there are already important steps being taken to make sure that the federal government will defer to the state on this issue. And ultimately, having state and local control over this issue is a lot better than having the federal government run essentially a one-size-fits-all policy for the entire country.
Christina, 2 minutes.
Thank you. I guess one of the first things that I'd like to say is, you know, it sounds like there are already a lot of challenges with this proposition if you think that things should already be changed. And our Constitution does state that you cannot change a ballot measure for 2 years when it is passed. And so if there are already changes and things that you should, that you think we should change, including regulating or trying to limit gummy bears that have a dose of four doses per gummy bear. In Alaska, it sounds like there's already a lot of challenges with this. And what is the rush? What exactly is the firestorm for us to rely on the guidance of a DC-based marijuana policy project? Now, the other thing that I'd like to mention is that you know, when you talk about the federal versus local, one of the things that the proponents like to talk about is crime. But don't be fooled. Crime is up. And when you look at Denver, Colorado's largest concentration of pot stores and population, and this is one of the largest areas that is concerning for the federal government and for our local crime enforcers, concentration of pot stores and population is the largest in Denver. Crimes against persons are up. Crimes against society are up. All other offenses are up. And the black market is thriving. There is so much more product impossible to regulate or to really track in Colorado. It's seeping into other states. It ended up in a backpack in Fairbanks on a street. And thankfully, somebody found it and turned it into the police. Now, this is not fear-mongering. This is not prohibitionist. The fact is, when you legalize something, it is more prevalent. It is everywhere. You cannot regulate it, and use goes up. And that is exactly what is wanting to happen here. It is a for-profit industry wanting users to use more, and it is not about regulating medical marijuana.
Thank you, Christina. Recently, Colorado and Washington both legalized and commercialized the sale of marijuana. Shouldn't Alaska wait to see how these states handle the risk? Christina, 2 minutes.
Thank you. Absolutely. This is an absolute rush. We have barely 6 months of data out of Colorado. Colorado is already trying to change the way that they try to manage this huge industry that has overwhelmed their state. As the police authorities and also many drug dealers locally say, the black market is thriving because it is prevalent, it is everywhere, and you can get it cheaper from a drug dealer on the corner. And if you can get it cheaper from a drug dealer on a corner, that's where you're going to buy it. The other issue is that the police have to waste a number, you know, a lot of their resources on managing these new laws. This would add new laws. This does not add more freedoms. Don't be confused about that either, because it does not allow the law enforcement to focus on violent crime. There is so much weed that they're having to regulate and enforce these new laws, and it's actually distracting them from what is going on. The other thing is, in Colorado, they already had infrastructure in place. They started to legalize and decriminalize marijuana starting back in 2006. And they've continuously seen their traffic violations, their fatalities go up in Colorado. As of 2011, 56% of their fatalities were caused by marijuana. Thank you.
Taylor, 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what was just said is incorrect that I would probably need half an hour to respond to all that. To suggest that 54% of all fatalities in marijuana have been, or in Colorado, have been marijuana related is a page right out of the Reefer Madness playbook. It's ridiculous. We don't need to wait and see any longer that prohibition has failed. Christina and her organization like to suggest that marijuana is legal in Alaska, and that's absolutely not the case. Thousands of Alaskans are arrested every year for simple marijuana possession, which is incredibly expensive for the state. It diverts important law enforcement resources away from addressing serious crimes. And it's just a huge, huge waste of money. It's also completely ridiculous to suggest that citizens in this state should be able to use as much alcohol as they want, that more dangerous substance should be legal, and yet we should be arresting and prosecuting individuals for making what's essentially a safer choice. So we don't need to wait any longer to see that prohibition has failed. The numbers that are being shared by the opposition simply aren't true. And if they were, we wouldn't be hearing the state's top marijuana regulator at the Department of Revenue saying that the system is working, that opponents' fears have turned out to be much ado about nothing. We certainly wouldn't see the majority of Colorado voters still supporting the law. These are people that live in the state, that are up close and personal with this industry every day, and multiple polls that have been released in Colorado show that if the vote were held again, that more people would support it. So, you know, the cherry picking of anecdotes and the twisting of facts is a page right out of the generations old prohibitionist playbook. And what's actually happening in those states tells a different story. So wait and see is just a messaging tactic. It's a political tactic. The fact is prohibition has failed, and we don't need to wait any longer to see that.
Thank you, Tim. This initiative has raised concerns by the business community that it might add costs due to risks associated with having employees under the influence of marijuana. Increased insurance rates, cost of drug screenings, and other precautions that will have to be put in place. What do you view the costs will be on the business community? Taylor, 2 minutes.
I think the impact on the business community is going to be hugely beneficial. What we're talking about is a multi-million dollar industry based around a substance that is safer than alcohol, that is currently the single biggest cash crop in the state, and it's not even close. And so this notion that by taking this multi-million dollar industry out of the hands of criminals, and so that regulated businesses can manage it no different than we do with alcohol, it's going to create tax revenue for the state. It's going to create jobs. The state of Colorado currently supports about 10,000 marijuana industry jobs, and the sheer breadth of the economic development that results from that is hard to measure. So employers will still be able to maintain their policies against marijuana or anything else. The initiative clears that out or spells that out very clearly. And again, we already have the highest rates of use in the country. And so if the initiative passes, we're probably going to see some marginal increase, but it's not going to be significant, and it's certainly not going to create this whole host of problems that we aren't already dealing with. If you live in a world where you believe that marijuana is not here, and it's not prevalent, and it's not being used by 100,000 Alaskans or more, then some of these arguments have merit. But it's here, it's not going away, it's ultimately safer than alcohol, and unless you're one of the very few people that believes alcohol prohibition was successful, there's absolutely no reason why we can't regulate and tax a safer substance in a similar way. So, you know, we'll probably hear more facts and cherry-picked scare tactics about what impact this would have on the business community, but what we're seeing in these other states is that jobs are being created, economic development that was benefiting criminals is now benefiting businesses, and tax revenue is being collected.
Thank you, Taylor. Christina, same question, 2 minutes.
Thank you. Well, I think the first thing that we should acknowledge is there are a lot of anecdotes that are being used, but I agree with Taylor. Alcohol is dangerous. Marijuana is dangerous. It is both bad. But this ballot initiative is about voting on marijuana. So it would be great if we could talk about the effects of marijuana on our society and our businesses, and that's what Alaskans deserve to focus on. When you believe marijuana is safe, you're apparently not concerned about the effects on our young people, because studies show and experts say the basic rule is any drug that becomes more available in society, there will be more use of. And as use expands, more people will have problems with the drug. In 2011, according to the Drug Abuse Warning Network, and I can back up if you would like to discuss later where I got all of my figures, because I am not pulling this or cherry picking this out of somewhere. These are verified data points. 1.25 million emergency room visits involving an illicit drug, and marijuana involved 455,000 of them. Now, when we talk about our industry that heavily relies on labor and qualified workforce and safety, I grew up in a native village of Naknek. The fishing industry is the number one economic factor in that area. We rely on thousands and thousands of employees from all over the world to be safe, to be aware, to be responsible. And the fishing companies have already been told, they are on warning, that if any more drug instances occur, their insurance will go up or it will be canceled. And this is for any business in Alaska. When you legalize, use goes up, it is more prevalent, it is a verified fact, and our businesses cannot withstand an even more shrinking qualified workforce. And when you say that there will be tax revenues to Alaska, I would love to hear the numbers, because that has never been stated. But when we base the numbers on Colorado's experience, it's $5 million in tax revenue and at least $16 million in cost.
Thank you, Christina. Next question. One of the more common arguments regarding marijuana is that it puts recreational users in jail, which is costly to both the corrections department and taxpayers. Some states have tried to find a middle ground. In attempt to find a middle ground, some states have proposed decriminalizing marijuana. Critics of that policy say it would still leave the sale of marijuana in the hands of drug dealers. How do you address this? Would you support decriminalization instead of legalization? Christina, 2 minutes.
Thank you. Well, the basic premise of decriminalization, one, this is not what this ballot measure is about. It's about commercialization and industrialization of all marijuana products. But the heart of decriminalization is about getting people to use less, not more. It is about making it, you know, safer for our society for either treatment or cessation. That is what other places have focused on when they look at decriminalization. It is not about a for-profit business trying to get current users to use more, and that is the vast and marked difference between commercialization and decriminalization. Now, with that said, and there are issues in other places where criminalization of marijuana is a challenge, and we saw that recently in Baltimore, but in Alaska, we do not have a marijuana incarceration problem, and that is verified by the Department of Corrections. At any given time, roughly less than 400 people are in jail for drug-related offenses, and the vast, minute minority of that is related to marijuana possession. Thank you.
Thank you. Taylor, 2 minutes.
Well, again, I have not sat up here and said that, you know, you should vote for ballot measure 2 because people are rotting in jail. What we have said is that people are being arrested and prosecuted, and Alaska has some of the biggest problems in the country with collateral damage with any interaction with the criminal justice system. And so, no, there are not people rotting in jail, but we are arresting and prosecuting, and in some cases ruining the lives of people for simply possessing a substance that's significantly and objectively safer than alcohol. The comparison to alcohol is absolutely relevant, because what you're hearing from the other side is essentially scare tactics based around trying to convince you that marijuana is too dangerous for adult use. But it's safer than alcohol, and if we recognize that managing and regulating alcohol in our society is preferable to prohibition, then we should come to the same conclusion about marijuana. The problem with decriminalization is that it doesn't solve one of the biggest problems of prohibition, which is the criminal market. Again, we have the highest rates of use in the country. The industry is already here. And so the question is not, should it be here? It's how should we manage it? And again, the majority of problems that we have seen over the years from marijuana do not relate at all to the use of marijuana. There was a stabbing in a JCPenney parking lot a few years ago that resulted from a botched marijuana deal. There was a shooting in the Carlson Center in Fairbanks that was resulted from a botched marijuana deal. And we saw a similar case in a rural village recently. And so if you make chocolate illegal, for example, that doesn't eliminate chocolate. It just gives criminals monopoly control over the industry, and you would have people literally killing each other over chocolate. And that's what we're seeing with marijuana. So decriminalization does not go far enough because it does not eliminate the black market, and it guarantees that criminals will continue to have control over this huge multi-million dollar industry.
Thank you.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Christina Woolston and Taylor Bickford. Bickford and Woolston are debating Ballot Measure 2, which would allow the state to tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. This debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and was recorded July 21st at the Egan Civic and Convention Center. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow served as moderator.
Next question. Do you believe marijuana is a gateway drug? Taylor, 2 minutes.
No, that theory has been debunked time and time again. There's a famous White House study that was done around 2000 that pretty definitively debunked that. The last three presidents have admitted to using marijuana, so if anything, maybe it's a gateway to the White House. It's not a gateway drug. Marijuana in and of itself does not compel people to start using other substances. I think there is some gateway effect of prohibition, because what we've done is we've taken this substance, we've given monopoly control of it to criminals, and so you end up having to buy it from people that also have access to other drugs. And so if people are being exposed to other drugs because of their marijuana use, that's a result of the underground criminal market. And by ending prohibition, we will move marijuana into a regulated environment, just like with alcohol, and will make it a lot harder for people to be exposed to these things. But the notion that using marijuana compels you to go out and start using heroin and cocaine and methamphetamine and these other things simply isn't true. And if it was, we would see much higher rates of use for those drugs in society. So it's not a gateway drug, and to the extent that it does lead people to other things, that's a problem with prohibition and not the substance itself.
Thank you. Christina, same question, 2 minutes.
Thank you. Well, it's interesting because this whole conversation is trying to get people to think that marijuana is safe. But the vast studies show and research shows that when you legalize a substance, use goes up, and particularly in our youth, because they think it's safe. The risk factor goes down for them and their use goes up. And I think this is an area where we should have extreme concern. We need to have an absolute eyes open look at how this will affect our young people. The basic rule, anything that comes more available in our society will be used more. Studies show that teenage marijuana users are more likely to use 30 times more likely to use cocaine, 20 times more likely to use ecstasy, and 15 times more likely to use abuse prescription pain relievers. Colorado, a leader in medical marijuana use, saw admission of treatment of marijuana dependence more than double over the past decade. One study in Seattle showed frequent or long-term usage of marijuana may significantly increase a man's risk of the most aggressive type of testicular cancer. The concerns are vast from a health standpoint. A study at Columbia found that drivers who get behind the wheel after smoking weed are more than twice as likely to get into an accident. I don't think that we need to argue that it is harmful. I think that we need to agree, like studies show, that when you allow more of it, when it's more pervasive, when it is more available, when it is seen as less risky to our youth, they will use more. They in turn become our employees. They in turn become part of our society. And they in turn, according to the research, are 30 times more likely to use cocaine, 20 times more likely to use ecstasy, and so on. These are not scare tactics, but I think it's pretty scary.
Thank you, Christina. And this will be our final question from our legislative committee before we get into audience questions. And Christina, you will start. Alaska has one of the highest rates of drug and alcohol abuse in the country. How does legalizing marijuana help fight the drug epidemic in Alaska? Christina, 2 minutes.
Thank you. So I grew up in a rural village, as I mentioned a few moments ago. Alcohol, drugs, other substances are absolutely harmful to our communities. It affects every single family, and it is something that we all suffer with and we all pay the price for. Legalizing a substance creates more use. It It reduces kids' ability to see it as a risky substance, and they will use more. Our communities are suffering and at the hand of suicide. Marijuana use in teens increases suicidal thoughts, increases depression, increases high school dropout. The Anchorage Chamber has a goal of 90% high school graduation by the year 2020. Alaskan Natives drop out at a rate of 50% or more in our communities and in Anchorage. This is not something that we need to mess around with. We need to find a way to come around and find a solution, a reasonable solution. And opening up the gates to a for-profit industry that looks to make a lot of money off of Alaskans in Alaska is not the way to do that.
Thank you. Taylor, same question.
Can you actually restate the question?
Alaska has one of the highest rates of drug and alcohol abuse in the country. How does legalizing marijuana help fight the drug epidemic in Alaska?
Well, again, marijuana is here in Alaska. We have the highest rates of use in the country. And I think you have to ask yourself if it is so dangerous, if the claims being made by Christina and her organization are true, then why aren't we seeing widespread problems currently? There's no question that marijuana has the potential to be harmful. We would never claim otherwise. But having the potential to be harmful isn't a reason to prohibit something. We also know that there's a very small percentage chance that if you use marijuana that you'll abuse it. Maybe 9 or 10% of people that use marijuana go on to abuse it. But that's not a question of legalization versus prohibition. That's a question of public health and education, and these are all things that can be made easier by ending the failed war on marijuana. The state of Colorado, the tax revenue that they've raised, they've spent a lot of it on drug awareness and prevention programs. They have an entire advertising campaign trying to educate people about the dangers of driving while under the influence of marijuana. That's something that would ultimately be good for Alaska. What we know is that the usage rate is going to stay relatively the same no matter what we do. You don't all of a sudden go from having the highest rates of use in the country and then having that double or triple as a result of legalization. Those of you in this room who currently don't use marijuana, I'm not going to put anyone on the spot and ask for a show of hands, but if I asked you, if legalization happens, are you going to all of a sudden start using? Most of your hands would stay down. So the issue is about education, awareness, ending the failed war on drugs will help us accomplish that, and we can actually utilize some of that tax revenue to have an honest conversation with our young people about the relative harms of these substances.
Thank you. Now we will move to audience questions. Communities in Alaska have an opt-out option for the sale of alcohol. Why doesn't the measure also include that provision for marijuana? Taylor, you have 1 minute.
First part of that answer is that marijuana possession is a constitutional right that is protected by the Privacy Clause of the Constitution. And so banning home possession is not something that the initiative could have legally done. What the initiative does allow for is the banning of the commercial side of the industry. So any village in the state, any community, the city of Anchorage, Fairbanks, whoever else, as soon as the initiative passes, they could exercise the local option and say no to the industry, and that's totally within their rights. So possession could not have been eliminated because it's a protected constitutional right, and any community in the state, or I should say there is no such thing as a dry marijuana community in the state because the Supreme Court has found that it is not dangerous enough to justify violating Alaskans' right to privacy and banning it.
Christina, same question too.
Thank you. When you look at the ballot measure, they targeted Alaska for the specific reason that they knew there were some allowances in our law for this, and they could get around that. And when you look at the pervasive nature of what is happening in Colorado, and there is no doubt it is everywhere in Colorado, and you cannot regulate a state that is on a road system. How are you going to regulate a state and monitor a state and track a state where you can get in a 206 and fly a half an hour to a village and nobody knows what you have with you? How do you regulate the mass amounts, the mass grows of marijuana that will get into our villages? You can make butane hash oil, and I encourage you to Google that, by the way. Butane hash oil, shatter, crumble. How do you regulate regulate a cookie? How do you regulate a gummy bear? How on earth are we supposed to keep this out of the hands of our kids and out of our communities when we don't even know what it is?
Thank you. Next question. If marijuana was legal, please describe the impacts in rural Alaska. Christina, 1 minute.
Well, studies have shown that use goes up. And when use goes up and risk goes down, it is pervasive. The industry is focused on, and this industry, by the way, is funded by wealthy businessmen from the lower 48 who are looking to make money off of Alaskans. That is what this is about. They have already dumped more than $400,000 into our state, into making us think that it's less harmful than alcohol. That's not what the debate is. The debate is whether this is good for Alaska, and it is not. If Alaskan villages see the increased expansion of the prevalence and the availability of marijuana in Alaska, can you restate the question again? I kind of forgot it, Andrew.
Certainly.
Sorry.
Certainly. If marijuana was legal, please describe the impacts in rural Alaska.
Oh, okay. Well, we all know Alaskan rural villages are already hurting. We need to focus on something that is good for our villages, not something that takes advantage of a situation where we already see so much hurt and so much abuse. Thank you.
Thank you. If marijuana was legal, please describe the... Oh, sorry, that's the same question.
Do I respond to that, Andrew?
Yes, Taylor, okay. Go ahead.
I have to really, at this point, take issue with not just the content of some of the things that Christina is saying, but also the tone. This notion that by accepting outside money, you're somehow invalidating a cause or a candidate is totally erroneous. If that were the case, Alaskans would have virtually nothing to vote on in November. You wouldn't be able to participate in any of the ballot initiatives. You wouldn't be able to participate in the Senate race, probably not the governor's race, certainly not the U.S. House race. And so that's a total distraction. And the fact of the matter is, this is an issue that's supported by the majority of Alaskans. This is an issue that is only on the ballot because 45,000 Alaskans signed their name to the ballot. This is an issue that will ultimately pass in November because Alaskans want to end marijuana prohibition. So we need to stop these, you know, really out of line attacks suggesting that this group of Alaskans who supports this issue is somehow does not have Alaska's best interest in heart. I was born in this state, I grew up in this state, and I want to see this state prosper. And this isn't about, you know, ruining the state from the outside. And I think you really need to tone that down.
Thank you. Medical marijuana is already legal in Alaska. Why do we need to expand that? Taylor, 1 minute.
It's not legal in Alaska. Voters passed a medical marijuana law in 1998, and the legislature gutted it by keeping the qualifying conditions extremely limited and by setting up no system for dispensaries. KTUU recently did a really compelling special on a young couple that lives in Anchorage. The wife, Jennifer, suffers from hypermobility syndrome, which essentially debilitates all of the joints in your body. She tried prescription drugs for years and found that marijuana was the only treatment that actually worked for her. In the story, her husband, Tyler, commented that, quote, they almost make you have to break the law in order to get the medicine you were approved to use, which is why we hope this law passes so at least it will take out that gray area. Christina's going to say that this initiative is not about medical marijuana, but you don't get to decide for people what this initiative is about. People have different reasons for supporting things. That's true of any public policy issue. And our medical marijuana law is broken, and patients are having to operate essentially as criminals in order to get the medicine that they are qualified to use.
Thank you. Christina, same question.
Thank you. I would agree with you. Alaskans did not get to decide what this is about because it is funded, and it was written by a D.C. organization funded by Lower 48 businessmen. Alaskans should get together to talk about how we come together around medical marijuana or decriminalization, if that really is the issue here. But the issue here is about for-profit businesses that are coming to Alaska to make a buck off of Alaskans. Now, the other issue around medical marijuana is there is a reasonable conversation to have, just like decriminalization. But this is not a reasonable approach because this opens up the gates to Alaska. And I was not aware that it wasn't legal. I thought that it was legal in Alaska, and that's news to me. But I think that's actually not the case. It's legal. We just need to come around a solution in order for medical patients to get medical marijuana.
Thank you. Government spends big money warning users about the harmful effects of tobacco, primarily smoke on the lungs. Should government spend equal amounts warning against pot use? Christina, 1 minute.
Thank you. There are significant health concerns around marijuana usage. The smoking of marijuana can cause changes in lung tissue. It can promote cancer growth. It causes many of the same problems seen in long-term tobacco users. Now, the marketing is a huge component, and the advertising of this is a really big deal because the marijuana industry has taken a page out of tobacco advertising and marketing tactics. It is exactly the same thing they did when they sold asthma cigarettes or they sold, wellness, tobacco. That is what is happening here. Now, they also sold candy cigarettes as well, which is exactly what the marijuana industry is doing. As my son asked me, why does that drug look like a treat? Why is that a candy? Why is it a sucker? Why does it look like something that I would enjoy having when we know it is bad for kids?
Thank you. Taylor, same question, 1 minute.
Well, again, the issue of edibles, the issue of anything that is all attractive to children is something that is going to be handled during the rulemaking process. And so, suggesting that by passing that initiative, we're going to have rampant advertising and rampant edibles that appeal to children is fear-mongering. That's something that our policymakers are going to sort out, just like Washington is doing, just like Colorado is doing. And the very premise of Christina's group, Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, is an attempt to tie, in your mind, a parallel between an industry which is based around a substance that kills nearly 500,000 Americans a year to an industry that leads to zero direct deaths a year. This is the definition of fear-mongering. There is absolutely no comparison between tobacco and marijuana, and yet the entire opposition group is organized to make you draw that connection in your head.
Thank you. Next question. Taylor, we'll start with you. 1 minute. Is voting no turning a blind eye to marijuana use and encouraging criminal production and distribution?
Yes, I think I might phrase it a little differently, but I agree with that statement. I think that we have to recognize that this industry is not going anywhere. And it's based around a substance that is safer than alcohol. And so if we can effectively regulate alcohol, and if we understand that the costs associated with alcohol prohibition far exceed the costs of having a legal commercial market, then you have to recognize the same thing with marijuana. This is a multi-million dollar industry that has empowered criminal organizations, no different than Al Capone and the gangsters in the 1920s and 30s. We have cases of murders that have occurred as a result of marijuana deals. So I think that to vote no on this initiative, you're guaranteeing not that use will go down, not that marijuana will go away, but that criminal organizations will continue to maintain monopoly control over a very, very profitable industry for them.
Thank you.
Christine? Can you restate the question?
Certainly. Is voting no turning a blind eye to marijuana use and encouraging criminal production and distribution?
Well, in Colorado, and I'm glad that you pointed out the death thing, because they can directly attribute a young man shooting his young wife after consuming a marijuana candy. They can directly attribute a young college student jumping out of his hotel room after consuming a cookie. There are deaths and there are accidents and there are explosions happening at an alarming rate. And I don't mean to sound like a fearmonger. I don't think that's a fair assessment. I think I'm a pretty reasonable person. But I don't want somebody making butane hash oil in my neighborhood and blowing up their home when their children are there. I don't think that's good for Alaska. The other thing is the black market is thriving. Legalizing does not drive the black market out of our industry. There is so much more product. It is impossible to track. There is so much more availability, and drug dealers are thriving on the corner market. In Colorado, the police force is not able to focus on more violent crime because they are so bogged down in trying to regulate and manage the additional laws that come from marijuana legalization.
Thank you. Next question. No on two has said here that the cost would be either $7 million or $12 million. Which is it, and why do these numbers not include the savings that would result by law enforcement not having to waste resources on marijuana? Christina, 1 minute.
Thanks. Well, I think I already addressed the cops will be spending more time trying to regulate and enforce new laws, one. I'm having just a terrible time keeping my train of thought here. There's a lot in my head. The cost to Alaska, the state has said it will be $7 million or more to try to implement this. The Alaska Chiefs of Police have said it will cost them at least $6 million annually to try to get their hands around this. When you look at Colorado, when you look at the rate of consumption, when you look at the fact that their population is 10 times bigger than Alaska's, when you look at the fact that they have 44% tourists in urban areas, 90% tourists in rural areas that are contributing to their tax revenue, we will not have that in Alaska. This is going to be a significant cost, just hard cost to our state. We are not even talking about the cost to business, the cost to industry, the cost to our healthcare industry, the cost to our families, and the cost to our kids.
Thank you. Taylor, 1 minute, same question.
The notion that taking marijuana, which is currently the biggest cash crop in Alaska, with a production value of roughly $150 million currently, according to estimates, that will, and moving that into the open economy is going to cost the state money is so ridiculous on its face that it's barely even worth responding to. Colorado is making money, Washington is making money, and Alaska will too. We're just not dealing with even the right numbers in this discussion. Christina said that Colorado's population is 10 times bigger. It's not, it's 7 times bigger. She said that the state estimated $7 million or more. They didn't. They estimated $3 to $7 million, and that was purely speculation. So we need to get the numbers straight. We need to recognize that according to a recent Bloomberg report, Washington and Colorado could expect to make as much as $5 billion or $2 billion over the next 5 years for marijuana revenue. Alaska is a small state. We also have the highest rates of use in the country, and this will be an economic benefit for the state. It's ridiculous to claim otherwise.
Thank you, and we have time for one more question. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, who opposed legalizing marijuana in Colorado, recently said their worries have not been realized. Why should I vote no? Taylor, 1 minute.
Well, I'm glad that was brought up, and that's absolutely true. Governor Hickenlooper came out and said that essentially the same people that were smoking before are smoking now, and that the difference is instead of that money benefiting cartels in that state, that the money's being used to benefit schools and to do drug awareness and prevention. He also came out and said that the marijuana industry has acted responsibly. The state's top regulator says that the system is working. And so if this was a disaster in Colorado, which Christine and her group want to convince you of, you would have less people supporting it instead of more. You would have the state's top officials and regulators saying, this is a disaster, help us, and they're not saying that. They're saying the system is working, that the opponent's fears have been unfounded, and that life continues much as it has. Seattle Police Department has said that. Multiple state officials in Colorado have said that. And so you need to look at the people who are actually regulating this industry and living in the state rather than the politically motivated group in Alaska, which is spreading misinformation.
Thank you. Christina, 1 minute.
Thank you. Well, as a grassroots organization, I think we have a lot to be concerned about. And Governor Hickenlooper said, wait. Wait and see what's happening in Colorado. Don't make this a rush to decide something that we have no data on. We have 6 months of data. And what we've seen is that crime has gone up in Denver, the highest population center in Colorado. And these are paid officials who are supposed to represent their state, like you're a paid spokesperson to represent the industry. We need to look at what's happening in other states around there. Marijuana is seeping into other states. They are continuing to look at legal ramifications against Colorado because they can't control their borders. They are looking at the fact that crime has gone up. They are looking at the fact that children are being admitted at a greater rate into the emergency room for marijuana accidental consumption. I think it is false to say that there are not concerns. It's false to say that there are no problems in Colorado because they're already trying to change their laws there around marijuana legalization. So there must be some problems.
Thank you. And we have enough time to give both presenters a closing statement. So, Christina, we'll start with you.
Okay.
1 minute, closing statement.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, I'm from the village of Naknek, and a student in Bristol Bay, Erica Hill, she and her fellow youth have come out with a stand against all drugs, legal or otherwise. And the evidence is proof that legalization equates safe to our youth. And I just ask this initiative, are the youth viewed as collateral damage, or is their opinion just not valid? And what they're selling with this organization is that this is inevitable. Just listen to Taylor. They're in the driver's seat. You know, they will spend whatever it takes to win. But look at what's really in this initiative. Google terms like butane hash oil and shatter. And look up marijuana gummy bears that have four doses in every candy. Take a look at what's really in this, and I'm confident you'll agree with us. This is bad for Alaska. It's bad for our kids. It is bad for business. It's bad for Alaska's images as a healthy and safe place to work. It will cost Alaska more than it brings in. They spent almost $1 million 10 years ago to try to shove this down Alaskans' throat. 170,000 Alaskans voted it down. That is a lot more than 40,000 Alaskans that were not told what was in this initiative when they signed this ballot.
Taylor, 1 minute close.
You know, a lot of regulated and responsible businesses, business establishments in this state serve alcohol. They do so responsibly. Christina's family owns a bar and restaurant that serves alcohol and does so often late at night into partygoers, and that's okay. But to suggest that that practice should continue and that we should continue pushing a safer substance into the underground market, that we should continue giving criminal organizations monopoly control over this industry, I think it's unfair. And I think that we need to recognize that alcohol prohibition failed, marijuana prohibition has failed for many of the same reasons, and voting yes on this initiative does not, you know, signal an endorsement that people should be using marijuana or not. It simply signals that prohibition has failed. It's time for a more sensible approach. And if we can do it with alcohol, then we should be able to do it with marijuana too.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me thank the presenters.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. Panelists Christina Woolston and Taylor Bickford debated the legalization of marijuana in Alaska. The debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and was recorded July 21st at the Egan Civic and Convention Center. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow served as moderator. For more information on Ballot Measure 2 and the legalization of marijuana in Alaska, visit our website at alaskapublic.org. Thank you for joining us today. You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage, Alaska Public Media. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Beattie Trantina. Thank you for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.